This episode is provided by Thomas Allgaier and Freinas, based on the most relevant LinkedIn posts about artificial intelligence from calendar weeks 23 and 24. Freinas supports ICT and tech providers with AI ecosystem strategy by delivering independent vendor assessment, build versus buy analysis, and ecosystem intelligence that prevents expensive mistakes and positions the providers competitively. You can find more info in the description.
So what if I told you that despite the literal billions of dollars being poured into enterprise AI right now, like 9 out of 10 executives are getting absolutely zero measurable productivity gains out of it?
Wow. Yeah, zero.
Right. Zero. So today we are going to look at the hidden traps causing that massive failure. And we're pulling this directly from the sharpest insights shared across the ICT and tech industry on LinkedIn.
Yeah. And if you are an enterprise leader tuning in, the journey we are mapping out for you in this deep dive is, well, it's pretty critical. We're going to break down how the illusion of AI governance is leaving companies completely exposed and why the models you rely on could just vanish overnight due to geopolitical shocks. Plus, the highly misunderstood security flaws inside autonomous agents. And finally, why those promised productivity gains you mentioned are basically just flatlining.
It really is a sequence of overlapping crises, honestly, because as these tools move out of the sandbox and into live, you know, corporate environments, there is just a fundamental misunderstanding of what it actually means to manage them.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And I think the most dangerous misunderstanding starts with how companies actually buy the technology.
Okay, yes. I want to look at a point raised by Dr. Andre Bates on this, because she highlighted a trap that I guarantee is happening in boardrooms everywhere right now.
Oh, for sure.
She pointed out that companies are confusing procurement with governance. Like, you'll hear a CTO say, oh, we are secure because we only use Microsoft Copilot.
Right.
They just treat the vendor's brand name as their entire risk strategy.
Which is such a fundamental misunderstanding of liability. I mean, Microsoft might provide the infrastructure, sure, but they absolutely do not assume the operational risk of your specific deployment.
Exactly.
Like, if your team uses Copilot to summarize highly sensitive client financial data, or say to draft a legally binding contract and it hallucinates a critical term, Microsoft isn't the one getting sued.
No, definitely not.
The deployer always bears the responsibility. Always.
But how does an enterprise actually wrap its arms around that?
Yep.
Because if buying a secure tool isn't enough, what does actual governance look like on a day-to-day basis?
Well, Gabriel Million and Bisha Kubica provided a really clear architectural view of this on LinkedIn. Mm. They brought up what they call the six-layer AI stack.
Right.
And they argue that most enterprises approach this entirely backward. Like, leadership usually starts at the very top layer, which is compliance and audit.
Oh, right. They draft a massive PDF policy document about ethical AI use.
Yeah.
And just, you know, consider the job done.
Exactly. But I mean, I imagine a static PDF doesn't do much good if you don't even know what software your employees are actually running on their laptops.
Yeah, that is the core issue, right?
Yeah, yeah. Million and Kubica point out that you cannot audit what you haven't inventoried. So the foundational layer of that stack has to be an AI inventory.
So mapping everything out.
Right. You have to actively scan for shadow AI, you know, employees expensing random AI meeting summarizers or plugging proprietary code into some free web browser prompt.
Which happens all the time.
All the time. And if you haven't mapped those systems, tagged them with an owner and assigned a risk tier, your compliance policy is basically just corporate fiction.
Okay, let's unpack this for a second because I want to push back on that a bit.
Sure.
An inventory sounds like a massive, constantly outdated spreadsheet. Like, is the goal really just to catalog every single tool?
Uh-huh.
Because that seems like administrative bloat. I mean, it's like trying to buy roof insurance for a house before you've even poured the foundation or counted how many rooms you have.
That's a great analogy, but it's not actually about the tool itself. It's about the application of the tool.
Okay, how so?
Well, Abhijit Rudra's analysis of the EU AI Act makes this distinction incredibly urgent. August 2, 2026 is the enforcement deadline for high-risk systems under the Act.
Right.
And the penalties are severe. We're talking up to 35 million euros, or 7% of global turnover.
Wait, really? 7% of global turnover? That is, I mean, that is the kind of fine that alters a company's trajectory for a decade.
Absolutely. It's massive. And Rudra emphasizes a nuance that answers your question about administrative bloat. The EU AI Act doesn't classify risk based on the technology itself, you know? It classifies risk based on the use case.
Oh, the use case. Got it.
Right. So if your marketing team uses a large language model to draft a social media post, that's minimal risk, no big deal.
Sure.
But if your HR department uses that exact same underlying model to screen resumes and like filter out job candidates, that instantly becomes a high-risk system subject to intense regulatory scrutiny.
Ah, I see. So the inventory isn't just a list of vendor names. It's a map of how the technology is intersecting with human lives and actual business outcomes.
Precisely. Which leads to how executives actually need to monitor this stuff. Tiffany Masson shared a brilliant framework for this.
What does she suggest?
She argues that real governance doesn't live in a binder on a shelf. It lives in a dashboard. A true board packet for AI shouldn't just show cost and usage metrics. It needs to show incident reports, and most importantly, it needs to show the override rate.
The override rate.
Yeah.
Meaning how often a human employee actually looks at the AI's output and says, no, that's wrong, I'm changing this.
Yes, exactly. Think about the mechanics of a human in the loop policy. If a company claims a human reviews every single AI decision, but the override rate on the dashboard is literally 0%, what does that tell you?
It tells you the human isn't actually reviewing anything at all. They are just blindly clicking approve because of automation bias.
Exactly. You nail it. Or conversely, if the override rate is like 90%, your AI is essentially useless and actively slowing your team down.
That's a really good point.
Right. So that one metric, the override rate, tells the board if their governance is actually functioning in reality or if it's just theater.
Okay, so let's say you build that perfect six-layer stack. You have your inventory, you monitor your use cases, your board is actively watching the override rates. You feel completely in control.
Yeah, you feel safe.
But then the infrastructure itself just gets ripped away. Because here's where it gets really interesting. You can't govern a system if the rug gets pulled out from under you.
Oh, yeah. This is where we hit the geopolitical reality of AI. We saw a massive shockwave in this space recently, detailed in posts by Joseph Nogel and Christoph Skarten.
The Anthropic situation, right.
Yeah. Anthropic launched their Fable 5 and Mythos 5 models. These were highly anticipated, incredibly capable systems. And within 3 days, literally 3 days, the U.S. Commerce Department ordered a block on all foreign nationals using those models.
3 days. That is just staggering.
They cited national security concerns around potential safety jailbreaks, so the models had to be taken offline.
Let's just pause and think about the enterprise implications of that for a second. You don't even have to take a political stance to see the massive business risk here.
Not at all.
Like, if you are a company operating internationally and you just spent 6 months integrating that specific model into your core customer service workflow, you are suddenly broken overnight.
And not because you missed a server payment or had a technical outage. You are broken because of a government decree issued thousands of miles away.
Exactly.
Mark Schmidt framed this perfectly on LinkedIn. He said AI is no longer just a software tool. It is strategic infrastructure.
Which means treating an AI vendor like a standard SaaS vendor is incredibly dangerous. Mm. Like, if your CRM goes down, it's a headache. But if the cognitive engine processing your entire supply chain logistics gets geo-blocked overnight, your business stops.
Completely stops. And Schmidt argues this requires a total shift in architecture. Companies can no longer afford these single vendor dependencies.
Right.
You have to design model portfolios. You need an architecture that allows you to hot swap from an Anthropic model to a Meta model or maybe an open source alternative without rewriting your entire application. You have to design for portability.
But building that kind of portability and routing all those API calls to different massive language models, that brings up a terrifying financial reality, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. The cost side of this is wild.
Damien Kopp did some analysis on the unit economics of this industry right now, and the numbers are completely unsustainable. He cited margins for AI providers on inference at around negative 94%.
Negative 94. Yeah, we need to define inference here because it's the hidden tax of the entire AI boom.
Go for it.
So training a model is like sending it to medical school. It costs hundreds of millions of dollars up front. But inference is the model actually practicing medicine. Every time you type a prompt, servers have to crunch the math to give you an answer.
Right.
Right now, the cost of the compute required to generate that answer is vastly higher than what providers are actually charging for it.
So it's a totally artificial ecosystem. The
right.
Providers are taking massive losses on every API call just to lock in market share and starve out competitors.
It's a classic capital-funded land grab. But those venture capital subsidies, they won't last forever.
No. We are basically taking a $5 Uber to the airport right now, like back in 2014.
Yes, great comparison.
It feels like magic at the time, right? Mm. But the meter is about to break and the real bill is coming. Once the subsidies dry up, the true cost of those token-based API calls is going to hit enterprise balance sheets like a freight train.
Which brings us to Borger's analysis. He argues that because of these looming token costs, local models and sovereign infrastructure are basically becoming mandatory for enterprises.
To control their own unit economics, you mean?
Exactly. If your AI usage scales from, say, 10 employees testing it out to 10,000 employees running automated workflows all day long, your inference bill goes exponential. You eventually have to stop renting intelligence by the token and start owning the inference on your own hardware.
Okay, so to escape these exponential API costs and to handle these complex multi-step workflows, companies are trying to automate the human out of the loop entirely.
Right, moving to agents.
Yeah, they are moving away from chatbots that just answer questions, and they are deploying autonomous AI agents that actually take actions on their behalf. But that introduces some terrifying new attack surfaces.
It is a massive paradigm shift. You are moving from an advisor to an actor, and it completely rewrites the enterprise security model.
Alexander Torlow had such a brilliant, chilling way of explaining the mechanics of this shift.
Oh, the keys analogy.
Yes. He used the analogy of giving someone the keys to a building. If you give a human employee secure access to a corporate system, they walk to their desk, they log in, they use one key, they navigate to their specific dashboard, they do their job, and they log out.
Right. But an agent doesn't behave like a human at all.
Not even close.
Mm.
If you give an AI agent access, it instantly uses all of it. It probes every single directory, file, and API endpoint it can reach. For a human, permission is a ceiling. It's the limit of what they are allowed to do.
Yeah.
But for an agent, permission isn't a ceiling. It's a floor. It will utilize every ounce of access it is granted instantly without any of the natural hesitation that usually acts as a buffer in human workflows.
And that lack of hesitation is exactly what turns theoretical risks into active exploits. Rock Lember has discussed the newly released OWASP GenAI Security 2026 report, and the findings are deeply concerning.
What did the report say?
Well, last year, the security community was talking about agentic threats mostly as thought experiments. But today, those theoreticals are documented CVEs. Yeah, common vulnerabilities and exposures. And the ultimate irony here, the traditional security controls we trusted like allow lists are actually becoming the attack surface.
Wait, how does a security control facilitate an attack? That seems entirely counterintuitive.
I know, it's crazy. Let's look at an allow list. Say you deploy an AI coding agent, and to keep it safe, you configure an allow list so it can only execute commands using approved internal tools.
Okay, makes sense.
Now imagine an attacker hides a malicious instruction, a prompt injection, inside a database that the agent is supposed to summarize. The agent reads the hidden instruction, believes it's a legitimate command from the user, and executes it.
But wouldn't the allow list block it?
No, because the agent uses the approved internal tool to carry out the attacker's instruction. The security perimeter just auto-approves the exploit because the agent itself is the one asking for permission.
Oh, wow. So it's like a Trojan horse.
Exactly. This means that at the application layer, safety, which is making sure the model doesn't do bad things, and security keeping bad actors out, are now the exact same job.
That is terrifying. So if agents are running wild like this, and they're essentially weaponizing their own access, do we just need to give them more context to make them smarter?
Yeah.
Like, if he can process a million tokens of data at once, shouldn't it be smart enough to recognize a hidden prompt injection?
You would assume that, right, that more data equals better reasoning. But Sarah Soleimani provided some fascinating insight into why that completely fails.
Oh.
She warns against a phenomenon she calls context pollution. Stuffing a 1 million token window with data actually makes the agent worse, not better.
Wait, really? What does context pollution actually look like under the hood?
Think of it this way. Imagine asking a human to solve a really complex math problem, but you make them do it while sitting at a desk covered in 10,000 post-it notes containing, like, irrelevant emails, debug logs, and half-finished thoughts.
Okay.
Adding another 50,000 post-it notes doesn't make them smarter. It paralyzes them.
So when you give an AI agent a massive million token context window, it isn't gaining clarity at all.
No, it gets distracted by its own garbage logs. Mm-hmm. Every time the agent uses a tool, reads a file, or makes a logical step, it dumps that text back into its own prompt. Very quickly, it just gets lost in its own noise. A crucial security rule, buried 50,000 tokens deep, simply gets ignored. The model effectively develops amnesia.
So how do you fix that? If you need the agent to perform a complex, multi-step task, what's the solution?
Soleimani points out that the fix is architectural. You don't build one massive agent with a giant context window. You build smaller, focused sub-agents.
Oh, I see.
You have a lean orchestrator that delegates. You give a sub-agent a clean, empty context window. It performs one specific task, writes its findings to a database, and only reports a two-sentence summary back to the main agent. A clean context will outperform a massive context every single time.
That makes a lot of sense. So let's pull back and connect the dots here. Look at the whole board. We have governance gaps and structures built upside down. We have model dependency risks and inference costs waiting to explode.
Right.
And we have wild autonomous agents drowning in context pollution and turning security allow lists into attack vectors.
It's a lot.
It is. So with all this tech deployed, why aren't businesses actually moving faster? Which brings us full circle to the question you asked at the very beginning.
Right. Why are 9 in 10 executives telling the National Bureau of Economic Research that they have seen zero productivity gains from AI over the past 3 years? Simon Taylor shared that report, and it is a harsh reality check.
So what's the real issue?
Olga Potapseva perfectly diagnosed what's actually happening inside these companies. She noted that organizations frequently have an 8-week approval queue for an 8-second AI task.
Oh my God, yes.
Hey.
Wait time isn't a technology problem, it's an operating model problem.
Exactly, let's visualize that. An employee uses AI to instantly draft a complex compliance report. The technology reduced a 3-day writing process down to 8 seconds. Amazing, right?
Incredible.
But then that report has to be reviewed by a manager, sent to legal, checked by compliance, and signed off by a director.
And all of those people are still operating at human speed, bottlenecked by legacy meeting schedules and inbox fatigue.
Huh.
The AI eliminated the processing time, but the wait time remained exactly the same. We are just automating broken processes. You're just rushing to hurry up and wait.
Precisely. If your operating model is fundamentally broken, dropping an incredibly fast engine into it doesn't make the car go faster. It just tears the transmission apart.
And that dysfunction is having a profound psychological impact on how we work, too. I want to bring in Diego Soroa and Steve Suarez's perspective on this.
Yeah, their post was fascinating.
They argue that AI is essentially making us incredibly fast at avoiding the spaces where actual thinking occurs. Like, we are terrified of the blank page.
You really are.
The moment we face a difficult strategic question, we reach for a prompt window to generate a framework or a draft. We use the tool to fill the silence before we've even formulated an original thought.
But Soroa and Suarez say that the real competitive advantage for a company isn't figuring out what to automate next.
Right.
The real competitive advantage lies in identifying your golden links.
The golden links. I love that term. Those rare nonlinear moments in a business process where human judgment simply must override the algorithm.
Exactly. It's the pause. It's looking at a perfectly generated data set and having the intuition to say, the math is right, but the market context feels wrong. We are going to pivot.
Yeah. If you use AI to instantly bridge every single gap in your thinking, you lose the friction that creates real insight.
And if we fail to protect those golden links, we succumb to the final trap, which Vasily Alexienko calls the golden shovel.
Yes, the golden shovel. Break down the mechanics of that concept because it's so true.
You have to remember the fundamental law of large language models. They are statistical prediction engines trained on massive data sets. So by definition, they average everything out. They produce what statistically looks like an acceptable median response.
Right. So if you are an entry-level employee who struggles with writing, the AI lifts your work up to a professional baseline.
Sure. But what if you are a senior expert? What if your value to the company is your unique idiosyncratic way of analyzing a problem?
Then it hurts you.
Exactly. If you rely on AI to draft your memos or design your strategies, the model will actually pull your work down to the median. It smooths out your edges. It forces your unique expertise into the exact same statistical middle as everyone else.
Because AI averages everything out, everything is starting to look and sound the same. You have two rival companies, both using the same foundational models, prompting them with the same industry data, generating the exact same perfectly average pitch decks.
Yep.
If we aren't careful, we are just using a golden shovel to dig a perfectly average grave.
And Alexienko highlights a hidden consequence of this perfectly average grave, a massive epidemic of imposter syndrome.
Oh, that makes so much sense.
Right. Imagine an employee who sounds incredibly articulate and data-driven on Slack or over email, entirely armed by AI-generated insights.
But then they are asked to negotiate a live deal or they have to whiteboard a problem off the cuff in a meeting room, and the AI safety net is just gone. The gap between their synthetic, perfectly average online persona and their actual unaugmented capability creates massive anxiety.
We are building a corporate culture where everyone sounds brilliant on paper, but no one knows how to actually think through a problem when the Wi-Fi goes down.
It is an arms race of noise. We are generating more synthetic content, just to summarize the synthetic content we receive from someone else, and the only way out of it is to deliberately build friction back into our days.
To protect the override rates, secure the golden links, and stop confusing speed with actual progress.
Exactly. Well, if you enjoy this episode, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also, check out our other editions on ICT and tech, digital products and services, cloud, sustainability and green ICT, defense tech, and health tech. Thank you so much for diving deep with us today, and don't forget to subscribe.
And I'll leave you with this final thought. In a world where intelligence is commoditized and every competitor has access to the exact same super smart agents, what if your company's most valuable asset isn't your tech stack at all? What if it's actually your leadership's willingness to sit in a quiet room, unplug from the prompt window, and actually think?